Hey, everyone.
Welcome to, well, I guess a musical episode, which we don't do very much. I guess technically it's not a musical. It's a dance movie, but I actually thoroughly enjoyed this. I guess this is the episode that will out me as a real Swayze fan, Swayze head. I guess it's also appropriate that we're releasing this now because there's the completely failed TV musical version that just came out, which no one's talking about because apparently it was unwatchable. I didn't bother. I'm pretty sure I had a lot less important things to do. So, you know, please enjoy. But follow us on Facebook, share with your friends. We're desperately trying to grow right now. And with season 4 around the corner, we're looking forward to expanding our numbers rapidly. This week on Myopia Defend Your Childhood, we learn you can have romantic chemistry even if you absolutely despise each other, like Swayze and Jennifer Grey apparently did. We watched Dirty Dancing. Did you have the time of your life? Yeah, you knew I was going to say that, didn't you? Don't lie.
In the music. The music sets you dancing. The dancing sets her free. Best Wrong Pictures presents Dirty Dancing. She thought it would be just another summer vacation.
Who's that?
Oh, them. They're the dance people.
But it turns out to be the time of her life.
Watch me now!
I can't even do the merengue.
He teaches her what she can do.
I'm not sure who you are, but I don't want you to have anything to do with those people again.
Baby, I don't see you running up to Daddy telling him I'm your guy.
Well, with my father, it's complicated. I will tell him.
I don't believe you, baby.
She shows him all he can be.
You gotta stop it now.
I know what I'm doing, Penny.
I'm scared of everything. Most of all, I'm scared of walking out of this room and never feeling the rest of my whole life the way I feel when I'm with you.
What they learn from each other feels too good to be wrong. Dirty Dancing, starring Patrick Swayze, Jennifer Grey, and Cynthia Rhodes. Get ready for the time of your life.
In the mood to listen to some geeky conversations? Feel like the internet isn't the best place for an in-depth, respectful exchange of ideas? Then head on down to the 42cast. It's a weekly show that covers a new geeky topic in comics, TV, movies, literature, or video games every week. We can be informative.
Back in my day, kids, Pluto was a planet, so it's gonna stay a planet.
Irreverent.
You learn so much from the X-Men. I mean, really. That Wolverine is the most important character no matter what.
Strange.
It's like, you know, Grodd if he went into theology or something.
Right?
Or controversial.
I believe, and I will swear to my dying day, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe began with Howard the Duck.
Find us on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, 42cast.com, or esopodcast.com. It's the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, I'm Nick Hoffman still, and we watched Footloose's, I guess, evil twin, Dirty Dancing. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter and host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood. And on panel we have...
Lauren.
And...
Thomas Herman of the Brothers Herman and the Geekly Oddcast.
I watched your YouTube videos. They need more views.
Christina.
Aww.
Aww.
Matthew W. Quinn of The World According to Quinn.
What's in that world? Is it Beekman's world?
B-movies, politics, and science.
Science!
Oh, had to be said.
I had my headphones on.
All right, so like usual, someone is actually defending this, and that's my friend Lauren. And as someone who's actually defending this, and I think we all enjoyed it, will you tell me if it held up as much as you hoped it did?
Absolutely.
Woo! So when did you first watch this? We didn't talk about this.
I think I first watched this elementary school. That sounds right.
Wow. Did you become a woman, like, in fourth grade? Because probably, Patrick Swayze was giving me feelings.
Probably like 7th, 8th grade. Yeah, and then this is where I totally fell in love with Patrick Swayze.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah, so.
It's why when I met you in like 9th grade, you looked at me and you're like, no, he's not going to do it. Because Swayze, man. That guy, the guy, he at one point walked down an like a hallway better than I have ever walked in my life.
Hell yes. He's got swagger. He's got swagger.
I've known Lauren too long. All right, so before we go any further, Christina, can you give me a little bit of the plot?
Yes. So the Housemans, that's the family.
Off to a roaring start.
I know. I'm fantastic at plot summary. they go to an adult summer camp.
Pretty much. Kellermans. Called Kellermans.
The Kellermans. Apparently, this was Retreats. A thing. You went and you did summer camp with your family, and you stayed in a cabin, and you took dance lessons, and you played charades, and you play charades.
When you said adult summer camp, I just imagined a lot more people in mustaches than were actually in the movie. But there were a few key mustaches. So what happens? Go.
So it's in the 60s. Basically, the daughter of the family, her name's Baby, she starts getting infatuated by dancing, by watching these dance teachers and not really doing so well in the classes. Ends up meeting them by carrying watermelons to, to the party, and then gets... I'm really terrible.
No, so she got off on the wrong foot.
Baby,
got it.
Baby, her real name is Frances, we find out, goes to this Kellerman's retreat with her parents. And exactly like Christina was saying, she becomes infatuated with this specific dance instructor named Johnny Castle. And if that's not a beautiful name, I don't know what it is. So she develops a crush on Johnny Castle, but Johnny's told not to, flirt with the guests and doesn't really like him. So anyways, Johnny has a partner named Penny. And one night we find out that Penny is in trouble. What happened?
Oh, she's pregnant.
She's pregnant. And this isn't good. By Robbie the creep.
Oh, he's such
knocked
a creep.
Her up. And so she has to get an abortion, apparently. And kind of delves into that. And she has to get money for that. And Baby uses her dad to get the money for Penny. But Penny has to have that when she can't do her dancing. That night, so Baby has to fill in for her. So Baby and Johnny start spending time together and soon fall in love. And
I think
their
that's
whole
good.
Journey.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Now, there's so much to unpack already. Because, like, this is one of these weird, like, coming of age tales, but yeah. Baby's already, like, a little too old to have a coming of age. Like, she's in her 20s, right?
She's I think she's going off to college.
But yeah, she looks about 25. Yeah.
I think part of the plot is she's going to go to college at some point in the near future because she's talking about what she wants to major in and how young Donald Trump, Neil, the resort owner's grandson, is like, oh, you're going to major in English, an MRS degree, and she wants to do something a bit more substantive, and he probably starts BSing it, wanting to be a freedom writer or something. So, I mean, she wants to do something a bit more thoughtful than women of her social class in that time would.
Now, Matt, I get the feeling from that description that – this is like this kind of like I don't even know how to put it. It feels like a movie that's more modern than it's supposed to be. And one of the things I have that's interesting about this movie is it's on one hand a jukebox musical where it's playing a lot of contemporary songs, right? It's supposed to be. I think the intro soliloquy is it's between Kennedy's inauguration and his assassination. Mm-hmm. Something like that. So it's 62, early 63. Yes. And it's literally a Borscht Belt kind of place. Like this is upstate New York where the people, like the rich people go for the summer, like you said. And it's even filled with shticky comedians like Wayne Knight. Meanwhile, everyone looks 30 years too old for the characters they're playing. Like if, like for a dad who has one daughter who's maybe in her early 20s and one who's in her late teens, the guy's 75 years old. And he's about to go off to do Law and Order. right? Like,
yeah.
It's
well, first, but no, yeah, thank you.
A daughter who's in love for the first time at the age of 17 clearly hasn't been doing it right. Like, it's like, I came from an all-girls school where the only person I was attracted to was the lesbian gym teacher. The whole structure of this is really weird because it's like, it's the first time she's seen guys before. Which is not any make it any less charmingbut I was telling them when we watched it, it's like a summer camp movie.
No, I'm sorry. No, pause. We all watched for the past whatever the length of this movie.
143 minutes.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Mr. Hoffman fawn over Patrick Swayze.
Right?
This is not a girl who's never seen guys before. This is a girl who's never seen Patrick Swayze before, and after seeing Nick fawn for over 2 hours, we can understand why a girl
shirtless, this, beautiful, sweaty, no buttons.
This is very firm understanding as to why she is falling.
I'm going to correct Lauren for a second. He's not sweaty when he's making love, which he does in 3 scenes. He's sweaty after dancing, which is the most erogenous thing, right?
Yeah.
That's sexy. A. And B, R.I.P.D., the sexiest man we've seen in a movie so far, right? Like, that's something.
I won't argue that
well
point.
About you know this her being too old, we fall in love the first time, she wants to be in to like study economics and go to the Peace Corps. Maybe she was the sort who's more interested in books than boys.
Well, she was interested in a Laffer curve, so I mean,
well, I was gonna say, you make that joke about economics and she says it, however they also make an Ayn Rand joke at the same time, as though Ayn Rand is because the guy who knocked up the woman who nearly dies and
wants to be a doctor
and the guy who knocked her up was pushing Ayn Rand on people and then trying to have sex with baby, because Ayn Rand does nothing but hate God and free love.
No. She wasn't. I mean, he was interested in baby at the very end of the movie, but he wasn't the person who was lusting after her for most of the movie.
I thought during the movie, like earlier in the movie, when she was wearing that red and white stripedy thing, like they were flirting back and forth. And then she dumps the water on his crotch at the end of the scene.
She was trying to get him to pay for the abortion.
Yeah.
That's right. The Mike Pence scene.
No, so, but at the end, no, Nick, you're right, though, because at the end he goes, "Don't worry, baby, I slum too."
Right.
I picked the wrong sister.
No, he did.
Wait, so young Donald Trump and the medical student are not the same person?
No, very much different people. No, because the young Trump is the son. The young Trump is the son of the owner of Kellerman's Ranch or whatever the heck it is.
In Waco, Texas.
I totally missed that. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And Robbie is an idiot waiter who's going off to be a doctor. And if anybody would ever let them near him with a scalpel, they're insane.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. Well, and the doctor that gave the abortion apparently had folding tables, right?
Like, yeah, it was a hack. And someone brought up, I just noticed this for the first time, all the bloody sheets in that scene.
Yeah, no, that's a rough scene.
That's a rough scene.
And then she spends the rest of the time on red, like on a red comforter with red curtains behind her. It was a graphic metaphor.
The coitins for you.
I liked how much thought they put into that plot. Like, for example, baby's dad clearly does not like the doctor who did it. He calls him a butcher. Well, so we have a real doctor who looked down on a back alley abortionist. Scene. And also how incredibly dangerous some of those things were.
Well, no, it was a Reagan scene. It was 87. This came out in 87. Yeah. And this is when they were denying the AIDS crisis going on. And so people were dying of AIDS. Like, that's what it's supposed to be.
Well, no, when you talk about how much there is...
It's supposed to be parallel to AIDS?
Well, that and to pre-Roe v. Wade. Yeah. But if you look at, like, how much this movie has to unpack, everything that's in it, this movie is wonderfully paced and put together. Like, there is not a misspent scene. There isn't a wasted scene throughout the whole thing. Well, everything has a purpose and a place.
Well, and we should talk about it a little bit, because as a 3-act movie, it's just about perfect. I forget the guy who wrote it, but it even has the Save the Cat moment, which involves an abortion, which is unusual for a Save the Cat scene. But essentially, baby and her family show up. She's entrangled by the dance, and then she... grabbing some melons, she goes to help she wanders into the employee dance where, like, people are having fun, like people, as opposed to this kind of, like, again, like family summer camp. It's like Disneyland before Disney
dancing.
Yeah, she walked into a ritualistic
when people
orgy.
People get excited when you use the title.
There's even two minorities there, which show back up at the end.
Well, I did notice an interracial couple. That would have been a very big deal then.
He's got a point, actually. He's got a very big point there.
Well, and the thing that they do about it is, people are just dancing around. Like they're changing partners and things. It really is supposed to be a very ribald scene. Act two, abortion lady has her abortion. Yes. I don't remember her character's name. I'm going to
Penny or Patty or something. Penny.
She doesn't have enough pennies to get the abortion, so she has to borrow. So, baby has to learn how to dance, right? And that's the middle, that's the middle section, that's act 2, and then act 3, everything falls apart and then rebuilds, and it's right, like you were saying, it's actually structured very nicely. It's one of the best made movies we've done on here other than Mighty Ducks 2.
That is a great movie.
I mean, right? The Flying V and right? The Knuckle Puck together at last.
Oh. Emily should be here in spirit.
Oh, mercy me. So we should talk a little bit next about Patrick Swayze, because I could listen to you talk about him all day.
And I will step back.
Win a man!
This was like his prime, right? Where he's like the bad boy, you know, at first, that the women fall in love with. But then he's the bad boy with a heart of gold.
Before he started ghosting women.
Yeah. He kind of has like the same
Ghost
character.
And Roadhouse, yeah.
Yeah, kind of Roadhouse. It's definitely Roadhouse. Totally.
He's the loner, the bad boy with a heart of gold. I mean,
Point Blank, right? Like the bad boy with the heart of gold.
Oh, and wears perfect. All black.
Oh. Yeah, all black. His parents were dancers, were both dancers, which I thought was interesting. So he kind of grew up in that environment. So that's like he kind of knew that ballet. He knew ballet and was very, like, familiar with it and stuff.
Well, and we were talking about this during the movie. For a kind of powerful masculine lead type, he is not, like, crazy creepy muscular. Like, because, like, this is the era of Rocky and the era of Rambo.
Schwarzenegger, yeah.
And Schwarzenegger and Terminator had already come out at this point. And he is, well, he has a dancer's body, right? Because he's a strong, powerful type, but he's not crazy. It reminds me a lot more like a John Hughes movie, but in a physical way, right? Like, because they are, like, it's understandable romance as opposed to a weird kind of like, I'm the guy in charge, so you're going to fall in love with me, right? Because he has zero interest in her and hates her for most of the movie. Yeah. And Lauren said when we were talking about it, they actively hated each other on the set, which made those first few scenes very believable.
Right. Patrick wrote in his memoir about how much they did not get along and they actually hated each other in real life. And I guess he felt Jennifer Grey wasn't professional enough and joked around too much and ruined takes and it would really piss him off. So a lot of that when he's like mad at her and the montage, you know, scenes and stuff was actually real. And they used that but the casting, you know, they couldn't deny what good chemistry they have. So despite them hating each other, it's like, well, sorry, you look amazing together. And I don't know, we were kind of talking, we don't know if it's like sexual tension or what, but you can't deny their chemistry. But yeah, they apparently hated each other.
So maybe that's why he throws himself off the stage so genuinely at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I was trying to figure out the name of that autobiography and I was going with Evenings in Leotards or... Spandex and Spanx, but I was just gonna read it.
Nick, you're probably gonna laugh, but for real, I think it's Time of My Life. I think that was the name of his memoir.
But was it a book or was it an interpretive dance?
Hopefully both.
I mean, I would have loved it because he died 8 years ago of like tragically of cancer.
Pancreatic cancer.
I just. If it were just a dance, a documentary of him dancing, because it's not unlike watching...
Interpretive dance.
Well, I mean, it's not unlike watching an 80s Jean-Claude Van Damme doing that flying split. You're just like, there's that one rare moment of perfection. He's a dancer. Him dancing is the best thing. Mm-hmm. He should have replaced Travolta in Pulp Fiction, because Travolta could... Now, the two of them are both great dancers, but that scene, he should have replaced Uma Thurman. The two, him and Travolta, Travolta's gay anyway, right? The two of them dancing together, all the Scientology in the world could not have ungayed that situation.
Were Patrick and John Travolta ever in a movie together?
I don't think they were.
That's like
the South Park episode. It's like Tom Cruise and John Travolta in the closet. Yes, well, we all knew that.
I don't know. It's just Swayze is the most, like, sexual dancer that is clearly not gay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has a very masculine way about swinging his hips. It works.
Which is so fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking about how the sequel is Electric Boogaloo. No,
Havana Nights.
Havana Nights, written by the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, because he wrote a powerful movie about the Cuban Revolution, but when you're a writer, you have no power over anything, so they made it Havana Nights, the sequel to Dirty Dancing. And so he gets his SAG card, but... And you just realize that this is a movie that's... I had a summer where I had a summer fling, and it was mm-hmm. one of those things, and you get that... They just made it into a dance musical.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. Because when you think back on your summer romances, you don't think, well, that was an awkward time I tried to kiss someone. Mm-hmm. This is a perfect, simple movie about that.
Yeah. It's the ultimate rose-colored glasses on a summer gone by.
Wearing right. with a guy with old summer. Ray-Bans and a leather jacket, right? Like you said he was Roy Orbison.
I said, a hunky Roy Orbison.
Summer loving, just like Grease. And we talk about like how it's... Like Grease, they needed a motorcycle at the end and
yeah, man.
Fly
yeah.
off.
Well, what do you think? Did Baby go off to college and they break up, or what do you think happened?
I almost would have wished it ended like Grease, where they literally ride off literally into the like horizon.
Yes, but then you would have had like film theories about this, and who wants that?
Yeah. No, you're right.
And fanfic.
I almost like it being more like Roadhouse, where it just ends.
Yeah, no.
Right?
You know, something I want to tell the listeners who've just watched this, if you are a big sitcom fan at all, I feel like every sitcom has done a parody of this like movie
for sure.
at some point. Like one or the other scene.
How many 90s cartoons made fun of this movie? I mean, I was just thinking back watching the early when they walk in on all of the employees and they're having their dance, and I was like, this is like Johnny Bravo.
Yeah.
Like there's or you know, I know Tiny Toons did a parody of this too. I mean, everybody has taken a stab at this movie.
You know, we were talking about recent movies, Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
mentions it and the lift and uses it. It's Ryan Gosling. It's very iconic. So many sitcoms and movies use the word "don't put baby in the corner." The infamous "beautiful" line. I mean, that's used a lot.
I had a coworker who couldn't stop saying it, but until recently, I had no idea what the heck they were referencing. So.
They literally liked putting infants in corners. Well, and I was thinking too, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think, but like, if this had more influence or like John Hughes movies, but it's it's a very similar kind of, well, this is 87, so it's a very similar idea because, you know, I mean, I don't know what else this director did, but like, this is, I mean, this is like...
Oh, Daniel mentioned it about three times.
Emilio Ardolino. He did Three Men and a Little Lady.
Three Men and a Little
Sister
Lady.
Sister Act.
And Hocus Pocus.
Sister Act.
Well, there's also...
The choreographer did Sister Act.
Oh, no,
the choreographer did Hocus Pocus.
The choreographer, that's right.
Well, you also have the difference in that, you know, so you have your John Hughes movie, which is... we went through different, you know, his comedies and is more dramatic, but there was always an element of humor that kind of went through it. Yeah. This one, I mean, has its jokes and all of that, but it's not... It's not a comedy. Humorous. It's not a comedy. That's not the whole intent. And so it's a different way of taking that teen movie, like, you know, and that's...
Well, and to me, the other side of it is it's much more from Jennifer Grey's perspective, because if you're looking back as a 31-year-old person, I'm sorry, ladies, I'm taken, and 31, but as opposed to my sultry young teenage voice, but teenage love is stupid, right?
At the time,
but the movie,
at the time, it's everything.
But I was going to say, like, this movie is told from Jennifer Grey's perspective, and it's so, everything is so important.
It's an extreme. Everything is an extreme.
And it's serious. Like, the thing I like about Animal House is it's the same thing, but reversed. Everything is ridiculous. Everything is silly. Everything is stupid. When they dance like idiots. But here, it's the most important dance she's ever danced, and she's not sure she can do it, but luckily there's a strong male lead who can make sure she dances it right. You know, like, but that's what it is. Right. It's how love feels at the time. Mm-hmm. It's just, looking at it, there's no sense of humor. The jokes come from people who are doing shtick.
Yeah.
If it were any other director or any other time period, it'd be like...
Oh, so just to take the whole... summer camp approach and go back to it, that this apparently used to be a thing that you would go on holiday with your family. Can anyone imagine a more awkward holiday
than I know.
3 weeks with your parents at a camp filled with old folks where you're like sharing classes with people that are 2 to 3 times your age? dancing.
Excuse me, mom and dad, I'll be next door in the cabin screwing the dance instructor. Be right back.
No, I'm going to go.
Excuse me.
To charades.
Sorry, mom and dad, I'll be back. Yeah, yeah, right.
She I'm going to go learn to be what it means go to be a charades. Woman. Like.
Yeah, that's true. That is very awkward. No one does that anymore.
Why? Yeah.
Well, no. You see, the ending of the movie where the old black guy, the band leader, and the old hotel owner are both sitting there talking about kids don't want to do that anymore, they'll go to Europe. They're both predicting the doom of their own industries.
Well, and that was part of the point. Was
well, but also it's kind of like, again, it's like being in high school and trying to make out with your boyfriend or girlfriend while your parents are upstairs, you're in the basement.
Yeah, right.
Like you're saying, it's like the cabin next door.
Oh, mom and dad, we're gonna watch a movie.
Or renting a beach house, or just can we go anywhere else? Right? But that's what it is. And you have the hot dance instructor guy.
Well, no, it brings into context so you go back to the Back to the Future. It's not like I've never parked with a boy before, and you're like, oh God, context, geez.
Right.
Well, and that's a good comparison because it's supposed to be going back to 1962 versus the 1980s, and it's so interesting that all these things we've been talking about remember 25 years ago? So for us, now that the movie is going to turn, 30. Well, by the time this podcast comes out, it's a 30-year-old movie. So that means, what's 25 years ago for us? That's 92?
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton has just taken off. And it was about to win, and Rock the Vote on Nickelodeon is taking place. So that means, Mighty Ducks. So when the finger skater is dating the striker.
Always and the second back. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Oh, yeah.
A ninja
will
rap.
Will hold you in our hearts.
Oh. When I think about you, it makes me want to fart.
And that is the height of risque humor.
I have satellite because I'm rolling in it. But there's a Nicktoon station, and between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. they have, or 9 p.m. and midnight rather, they have something called the Splat, because gross. But they show one of those shows, and they had a Salute Your Shorts night. Wow. And I was watching it, and I was just like, my God, this is what I watch. There's a reason why my parents didn't talk to me for a bit.
See, at least I go back and watch Pete and Pete and go, okay, I can at least hold some of my taste in high regard, but some of it, dear God, shoot me now.
The mixture of bleak and hope there is something. But we're talking about a movie which is all rose-colored, man.
Oh, yes. No,
and
definitely not.
And leotards and tankinis.
This movie is pure nostalgia from beginning to end.
It's the sweetest movie. Literally, it's sweet.
They really miss their high-waisted pants.
Do we need to? Does she need to defend this movie? Is it a necessary?
No, I think we're good. At this point, we're just talking. Did you see her? She looked good too.
But is that a bad thing? I think that's a good thing.
Oh no!
I'm just glad we had a movie we could all agree on.
There you go.
Except for Matt. Matt doesn't.
Matt's out of it.
It was not my type of movie, but it was actually very well done, and Jennifer Grey does a really good job as Baby or Francis or whatever, and they touch on a whole lot of really deep stuff in a way that's not preachy and annoying.
That's Ferris Bueller's sister too.
Oh yeah, that's
Bueller.
So I mean, not my kind of movie at all, but I think it was very well done. So no, I'm not going to be disagreeable this time.
Well, I would just say, we've done a couple of these, and I think Legally Blonde we did. No, we didn't do Legally Blonde. We did Mean Girls. We all liked. We did a movie that I wasn't invited on. There was too much estrogen. I just like this movie because, first of all, Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Swayze.
Oh, yeah.
We did, if you guys haven't listened to it, we did Roadhouse, 6 months ago. And other than the fact that Zach went to the bathroom for 20 minutes and then came back, Michael and I just talked about how hot Swayze was the whole time. Because, girl, he wasn't wearing underwear. We didn't even talk about her jean vagina.
No, we didn't. In her short shorts.
Yeah.
The shortest of shorts, but yet they were still high-waisted mom jeans. Right. High-waisted mom jeans.
They were mom short shorts.
Somehow.
No, Jennifer Grey does a great job. She is a great actress in this. I thought she did a great job in it and everything, too. And apparently, she became very self-conscious after this movie, and we were kind of talking about it. She got two nose jobs after this. Which I thought was kind of interesting.
So was this her original nose then?
She had it in Ferris Bueller as well. It was after this.
Maybe she had a deviated septum and had to deal with it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
She still exists as a person.
She does. Right. She's doing.
Oh, sorry. She's
doing
go ahead.
A Lifetime movie, I believe.
She is. It's called Untogether.
There we go. Untogether.
And she's in post production on a movie called Duck Duck Goose.
Well, she in this movie, she has the most very well done facial expressions. Like when she walks into the employees' dance party, and she's like, "Wow."
She learned how to feel feelings, man. Mm-hmm. She did 25 after school specials on ABC. Also, her first movie was Red Dawn.
That's right.
I love that movie. Sorry, I only had to bring that up because.
Patrick Swayze was in that. Was he not? Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Oh, so they were in that movie together too.
But less interaction.
Reckless, but Reckless, she was like essentially a featured extra. So she was in Red Dawn as Tony. Yeah.
And then she had a thing for Charlie Sheen and Ferris Bueller.
She sure did. I mean. Mm-hmm. So did I, but but only because at the time he had access to all the cocaine.
Well, he still does.
I mean, if you want to make someone sweat in a dance scene when they're not actually dancing, you just give them all the cocaine.
Well, this was the 80s. Just saying.
Right? It was free for white people.
Right.
I really wanted them to make a Reagan joke like they did in Back to the Future.
We also learned that Patrick Swayze can sing.
And he sure did.
He has his own song. And Nick and I were the only ones that freaking knew this song.
What's the title of the song?
She's Like the Wind.
Yeah, I think that's what it's actually called.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Like the Wind. I'm sorry.
They make it in those Friday night 80s radio shows. They talk about how that actually is Patrick Swayze's song.
It is. Exactly.
And that was being I was like very surprised.
And I will state this for 80s, you know, action stars and such as that. Swayze beat Willis for singing.
Yeah, well, I mean, and to be fair, we were doing it as 80s as possible because we had Pizza Hut for dinner, Thomas and I were drinking Budweiser, and Lauren and I were singing that song to each other. Because apparently, out of 30 million people, we were the only two who had ever been to an 80s night ever.
Yeah,
fair. She's like the wind. Christ. This was fun.
It was great.
And I've had the time of my life became huge after this, right? Like
it did.
It was known for...
Well, and I mean, it was...
I think it won a Grammy.
It did. I mean, it was... For those of you who don't know, it's not unlike how the next year it was The Bodyguard, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Right, because when you have a song like that, which is weird because everything else, with a few exceptions, is a 60s jukebox musical, like where they're playing... classic like Chuck Berry kind of songs, and then they have one 80s song and it's the headline like a Bond movie where you have the one song and throughout they're playing the instrumental version to make you remember that there's going to be this thing at the end.
We spent a lot of money on this, so like just
and they
foreshadow.
Spent money on every song because they played the whole song every time of every song. Without even a montage. It's not like she started dancing and then it cuts to her walking to the cabin at the end of the night. No. They danced the whole song. And I was fine with it.
But you enjoyed it. Yeah.
I was going
to
say, like...
It was, like, really awesome to watch. It's the reason Dancing with the Stars is so popular. Everyone likes watching flashy dancing like that.
To your point, and if Daniel were here and not dead in a horrible fiery accident, I would say it's the kind of thing that any other movie would screw up on. Because... It would be the kind of thing another director would get the wrong memo from, right? Where
it would feel like filler.
It would feel like filler, or they'd be like, cut the scene, cut the scene, cut the scene. But they actually bothered to spend the money to get good choreographers and good dancers. So when they cut around the room, you're like, oh, these people are actually worth dancing other than just the stars of the movie.
Right.
Right? Which matters, because otherwise, if it weren't good, if it was just one good dancing couple, like if it were a sitcom, you'd be like, I can't watch this for 4.5 minutes. But otherwise, you're like, oh, Swayze.
And of course, they had to put the spotlight on Swayze and Jennifer Grey, though. No.
They did.
Yeah.
Now, the question I asked at the beginning of the movie, which no one can answer me, is who's better, Swayze in this or Kevin Bacon in Footloose?
Good question.
Both have the highest waisted pants.
Swayze in this.
Swayze?
Swayze.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm going to...
I feel like Kevin Bacon is just... Everything else is overdone.
I would say I think Kevin Bacon overall is a better actor, but Swayze's a better dancer.
Yes.
Well, that and you I can't play agree. 6 degrees of Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
I would pay 6 degrees of... So.
You couldn't even finish that line. I knew what you meant.
I mean, because frankly, in Roadhouse, he's sensually dance fighting... Right? As a bouncer, he's like...
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
For those of you who can't see, we needed that on camera.
We need that on camera. He does the same pose in this movie when he points at baby. Oh, like, yeah. Come hither. Come hither, I mean, my love.
If it was 20 years later, he would have been the Red Power Ranger, man. Like, he's sensually fight dancing this whole movie. Like, it's amazing. Right?
Right. No, I have to agree with you, though. Kevin Bacon is the better actor, but he's the better dancer.
Can you imagine Apollo 13 with Patrick Swayze? And he's, like, dramatically floating in space. Da, 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 da. He's David Bowie. Bowie's in space, man. Like, it's just...
Ground control to Major Tone.
10.
If you're going to compare the two movies, I feel like, though, you could relate more to Dirty Dancing. Like,
oh,
I
because mean, we've been, yeah. Again, I've been in that situation, right, where I've been at a place
you've had
with
an
a girl.
Abortion. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it's not funny.
Where I had to dramatically dance with someone and my friend was having an abortion. No, I mean, where you have that summer love.
Right.
I mean, yes. Because this is essentially Grease for people and not just cartoon characters.
True.
Right? There, it's a summer loving thing. But again, it's at a place that you have to deal with as opposed to Grease.
And yeah. I think everyone's kind of had a person they dated that their parents weren't thrilled about. Mm. And
again, that's really could be a summer fling, but you feel like it's more. Mm-hmm. And again, the thing about Grease is literally at the end, it's... they fly off into the distance, which makes you realize, oh, they died at the beginning of the movie and this is all a dream. It's Jacob's Ladder.
See, I feel like the ending of this movie, if it had been extended just a little longer, which is why it's good where it ended, would have been like the ending of Mrs. Robinson.
Oh, see, I thought it would have been the beginning of Rocky Horror where they drive off, but then the car breaks down and then they meet Dr. Frankenfurter.
Can we talk about the ending and the talent show?
Oh, yes. My God. Again, if you
can we talk about her talentless sister and then move on? Oh,
no. No, her talent was having boobs in a bikini.
Yes. Yeah.
Granted.
Because that's what the camera was focused on. Like, her face wasn't even in
focus. Oh, no, the ending dance. She's just hopping up and down and a guy staring at her bosom. It's all it is.
Her bosoms.
Thank no, you. It's singular, not plural.
Thank you.
But yes, the finale, the end of the summer when they finally do their dance and they finally get their lift right.
Well, and he flips up his collar and goes, you know, usually I'm the last dance of the summer, but they wanted to fire me, so I'm going to dance early. And then literally...
Do it my way.
I did it my way.
I'm sorry.
This is a singing podcast.
Yes,
that's
it is.
All.
But that's literally all I can sing before they sue me. So it's like if I was 2 words into Happy Birthday and then Disney would just come down.
Actually, you're good on Happy Birthday.
That's
now.
Right. They lost that scene.
They did lose that
Screw
one.
Screw them.
Oh. Finally.
But, you know, I agree with you. It really is, could be, if you have seen Wet Hot American Summer, it's like, let's wrap this all together with a talent show, I guess. But this actually, like, Matt was talking when we were talking during the movie, because you can't watch anything until Swayze dances, then we all shut up and just stare. But
truth.
He brought up the fact that they were doing a dance montage and she was trying to learn how to dance on a bridge. And he's like, well, it's a cliche. I'm like, no, this is 87. This is before cliche was invented. They elected Reagan, for God's sake. But a lot of this comes from this movie. It's amazing, as Lauren said at the beginning, how much this movie is now referenced in everything, even cartoons, like Thomas said.
So well, I was thinking, I thought this might have been the first time they'd had a training montage scene. Mm.
Mm. Even the movie Wings, which was the first Academy Award winner for Best Picture, had a montage.
But it'd have a training montage, like a karate movie.
Karate Kid was 2 years before this.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And Rocky was 2 years before that. But I would say here, the thing is that it's... what's the song? I'm so excited. That's what the music video is. Like, it's literally her doing the same dance over and over and over until she gets it. This is that. This is like a Madonna music video before Madonna music videos were just cone boobs.
Right.
I love helping. How you were like at your chest during emotion there.
Right here.
Yeah.
girl.
Just to visualize
it. This is a series of like moments I will never forget.
So people ask for the webcam, but you're not Patreon subscribers yet, and we don't even have a Patreon, so send me a check to cash. So we've already been talking for almost 40 minutes, so I'm going to go to Matt and say, why is this the greatest movie ever made?
I wouldn't go that far.
What a buzzkill.
Star Citizen Kane. No, you were saying that you hated people. No.
No, babies. He hated babies.
He hates babies.
I say, no.
Kick puppies.
Yeah, I do that all the time. With my big old boots, yeah. And I'm glad the election went like it did. Uh-huh.
I was going to say, we should talk a little bit more about the characters, because we've talked about Baby and Swayze. Baby Swayze. Mm-hmm. We should talk about everyone else. But there's not a lot of actual characters.
Her mother had like two lines in the whole movie.
Other than looking like Jackie Kennedy.
That she couldn't golf Kelly and she Bishop. Takes after me.
But they got a pretty like popular actress to do this. Like, well,
I was looking at the TV Tropes page. See, there's something I'd missed. And it says that someone who wrote it is convinced that young Donald Trump wasn't making that up about going to join the Freedom Riders. I figured he was just making that up to try and impress Baby because he knew that she was smart.
No, I have
year, to. They came to my school.
No, so I thought he just was making that up to try and suck up to her. Well, but the TV Tropes author is theorizing he may have actually been genuine, which makes him a bit more complicated than young Donald Trump.
See, I disagree because TV Tropes is bullshit.
See, you go.
Well, no, I was just going to say, like, it's the kind of thing you say to pick up ladies because you're trying to sound like you care about things.
That's what I thought.
Ladies,
then I would go with your instinct rather than read TV Tropes.
Well, I'm just saying it might be. I'm just saying if maybe that could be a bit more development if he wasn't.
No, because I have to take his line where he goes, it's like, you know, what has he got that I don't have? Two hotels, and it's that level of douchiness that makes you go, yeah, this is a guy who's willing to lie to get into a woman's pants. I have no doubt about that in my mind.
Well, just how he talks to his employees, is. Like, they're not people.
We'll do the pachanga.
You get the impression that he's done this before with several other women.
Repeatedly throughout the summer.
Yeah. Like.
Well, and it's also that, like you said, it's the same kind of trope that we always have where there's the boss and he's doing this. And then there's the little snotty kid who's like, well, I'm in charge if my dad's not around, right? Because that's what he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so he's saying whatever he can. Well, I was going to go march with Martin Luther King, but my dad said I couldn't. Like, because that's what Freedom Summer is, a thing that happened when people cared about people. And, like, that's your history moment. But that's kind of what you get the feeling. Like, he's saying whatever he can to make it sound good to a woman who he thinks cares about stuff, but she cares about the dance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another character I thought they really actually developed and did well was Penny.
I liked Penny.
You know, she talks about how she was kicked out of her house, and I think they did try to do some character development.
Oh, you feel there's more backstory there than you get. Yeah. Like, that she's not just a two-dimensional character who's just there.
Well, and nothing is worse than a female character who's the slut who gets tossed aside, right? And so they said, like, look, she got kicked out of her home. This is her job. She learned how to dance, and she thought she found someone who loved her, and he read Ayn Rand, and so he hates everyone, like Ayn Rand does to people. So he tossed her aside. Like, it's really a sad story, and then Patrick Swayze's character is the one who's just, he cares too much, damn it. But, I mean, that's what it is. He's supposed to be, well, it's a snobs versus slobs movie for a bit, right? Because there's the rich people, and then they try to take care of each other. And the fact is, the guy who knocked her up wants to be the other level, so they all hate him, and rightfully so.
Guest versus staff.
And at the end of the day, he shows up wearing a horrible sweater. Like, he shows up in the douchebag sweater, and Swayze kicks the shit out of him because Swayze's the only one who's allowed to wear heels the whole movie. And so he kicks the shit out of him with the heels. He deserves it. The guy's a putz. Yes. Right?
It was a great Roadhouse moment, actually.
Roadhouse!
I was a tribute to Roadhouse. Right,
it was
there.
Sexy fight dancing. It was. As I learned from Bob's Burgers.
I love when he was like, come on, hit me. And he let him hit him.
Like, just once, so it doesn't look like I'm kicking the shit out of you for no reason. It was a curb stomp. I looked over at Daniel, who felt feelings for once. And we talked about how it looked like a fight. We talked about how it looked like the fight scene in Godfather. Because again, like if it was one trash can away from literally curb stomping him in the corner, right? Which is right, because
or
again,
West Side Story.
Or West Side Story. They had sexy dance fighting. It even ended like a West Side Story. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the point is, one person is standing up for people's feelings, whatever, and it's Swayze. Like, it's fantastic. He's the only one who stands up for anyone. He even stands up to What's-Her-Name's dad.
Yeah, that's right, he goes. But she stood up for him.
It's true. It's fantastic.
Isn't seeing The Godfather not sexy dance fighting, but Sonny Corleone wrecking the shit out of his sister's abusive husband?
That's what I'm saying.
But that's not sexy dance fighting. I thought it was just about to kill him.
It can be sexy.
Okay. To each their own.
You've never stood up for your girlfriend, have you? You need to do it, man.
Oh, that woke her up.
Listening to that put her right to sleep.
No, I was saying, I thought the scene in The Godfather wasn't supposed to be sexy.
Was supposed to be sexy. I'm saying he looked good doing it.
Oh, okay.
You're allowed to look good if you're being right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's true. It's like fencing. You can fight and look good, right? Mm-hmm. That's why everyone's in love with Johnny Depp after Pirates of the Caribbean.
If you're on the right side of justice, if you're on the right side.
Girl, Bruce Wayne, ladies. Mm-hmm. We're having a moment, Matt.
Wait. The smoldering eyes.
No, please. Hungry eyes. Hungry eyes. I feel the magic between you and I.
It's not the rhyme I thought, but sure.
Yeah, I was wondering about that one.
Geekly Oddcast is never this silly, is it?
No, never.
All right, guys, we've been talking for 43 minutes. We should wrap this up. So before we have the ladies talk, I'm going to have Matt talk because the smolder's going to happen later. So, Matt, this is almost more interview than normal because usually you say, meh, it was okay. Did you like the movie?
There are a bunch of chunks of it I didn't really find that entertaining, hence, you know, phone time. But I think it was very well done. It was in many ways very thoughtful. And I did like the soundtrack.
As a movie about a romantic, I mean, it's not a rom-com, but it's like as a romantic situation, did you believe that it was a believable romantic situation?
Yes.
I'd say that's good, because frankly, I don't think a lot of romantic movies feel realistic.
Yeah, I have some more feminist-inclined friends who call romantic comedies stalker films the laugh track.
And was that this?
No.
So that's a success.
Yeah, I was kind of agreeing with you while working that kind of bit in.
Well, right, but you sound oftentimes kind of like I'm interviewing a robot, so I'm giving you a chance to flesh that out.
Where is John Connor? Robot.
That appeared in the third act when he showed up in the leather jacket, the black pants, and like the sunglasses. I wish Ray-Bans were still like $3. Like they used to be bargain band sunglasses.
They did?
That was the idea. And that's why he was rocking them out so good, because he was supposed to be the poor kid wearing the Ray-Bans, because at the time, they cost $5.
How funny.
Yeah. Do you not know that?
I didn't know that.
They got bought out by the Luxacor?
Yep. The Italian.
And they own everyone. They own Prada. They were the ones that made Oakley go bankrupt.
Yeah, and then they bought out Oakley.
Yeah, because they want to own everything. So now they're the reason. Once they bought Ray-Ban, they charged 50 times more. So they really used to be the kind you would get at Publix, the checkout line. Wow. So that's why he's wearing them, because he's supposed to look cheap.
And of course he doesn't.
Thanks.
The mullet in. Yeah.
No, I love the history.
I do like how he has the mullet that just goes above the collar. I love this movie. All right, now Thomas, because I'm going to give the ladies last. Did you have hungry eyes? Because I did.
Just make a really, really bad joke they're sitting on for the entire podcast, but I'm going to let it go.
Another
movie. No, I mean,
if you want me, girl, let me know.
Well, I had the time of my life, so I mean.
I'm Audi 5000. Thomas, go ahead.
No, I enjoyed it. It's a great movie. It's definitely rewatchable, and because I think watched about 2 months ago at this point for the first time, and I really enjoyed it. It was great for a second time too.
Thank you very much, buddy. Christina.
Well, of course, I love the movie. Mm-hmm. There's no denying it. I've actually not. Well, besides Matt here, it's surprising that I've encountered someone who thought it was okay versus wonderful. But it is realistic. And I think that's the thing that keeps you going back and putting that DVD in, you know, every other week. But I don't know if I can say anything else about it. I think we've said enough about it. Like,
well, right? No, that's fine. Thanks, Christina. And Lauren.
Yes, I loved it. I love this movie. I think we've touched on it a bit, but I think it's beautiful 80s nostalgia that I just love. There's something about that era that speaks to me. I mean, one of my all-time favorite movies is Breakfast Club, so there's something about that era that just takes me back. I think it's the music and the dancing, and Swayze and Jennifer Grey, I just think, have amazing chemistry, and I just think it's just entertaining. It's not really, you know, although Dirty's in the title, it's not like a raunchy, you know, violent. It's just very kind of wholesome, romantic movie. I really enjoy it, and I think it's entertaining.
Thank you. I mean, frankly, I'm not going to say anything that hasn't been said a lot because, A, I enjoyed the movie. But, B, I think it's nice to show, as a movie, the chaos of romance, because you want to focus nothing more on than the person that you're infatuated with. And she's infatuated with him before he even notices her. And so that's the plot development, right? He's trying to prove that he's who he is, and she's trying to prove that she's worth his time until they fall in love. And so she learns how to dance, she learns how to do all these things, and with that, she learns how gritty and dark his side is. He's essentially taking care of all the people who work for this horrible boss who doesn't give a shit other than making sure that the camp looks like it's supposed to work. I think that's kind of interesting because it's the way so many romance kind of things work. You learn the good with the bad, and while you're trying to get closer to the person you care about, it's the dirty part isn't finding out who they are, it's finding their baggage. I think overall, the storytelling is so, like, on a rail that you don't notice how terrible that world gets until it literally crashes down in the third act. I think that's actually very good storytelling. Overall, and, I mean, the filmmaking is, it's not even like it's competent or incompetent. It's they use a lot of nice visual cues. It looks good. The movie seems good. It flows well. And there's even color-coding scenes. However, I think the fun part of it is that it's a dance movie. It's a dance movie with a plot, and that doesn't happen very often. So I would say watch it if you haven't watched it, because it's a lot of fun. And the music is good. And if you haven't seen it before, which I haven't, this is the first time I'd seen it all the way through, other than the fact that when Swayze died, there was a lot of Swayze montages. And so I saw a bunch of these dance bits because, like you said,
yeah,
he was just a dancer who could dance. Mm-hmm. And frankly, if it were, say, Charlie Sheen and it was about a Coke party, it would have been the same thing. They just chose the fact that he was really good at dancing to be the setting for it. Jennifer Grey was the one who had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That makes the story actually a story, because I believe that she had to keep up with Swayze.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm sorry to interrupt
your...
No. I just... When you pointed out that it's a dance movie, I'm like, that's why I love it so much. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I literally eat up every single dance movie that comes out of theater. So, like, whether it be, like, Step Up or whatever, I just cannot get enough of those movies.
Well, the thing I like about...
There's not very many.
No.
Well, and the thing I like about it, in some ways more than West Side Story or Chicago, is the fact that they acknowledge the fact that it's a dance movie, right? Because in Chicago, it's storytelling through dance, right? Just like Fosse, just like West Side Story. People apparently just dance in this world, right? And when the song ends, it's like a song never happened. No. Here, you did the dance wrong, we're fixing it, right? In that way, it's almost like a sports movie where... In Mighty Ducks, when we mentioned it 30 times, but when they lose the game, they have to fix it, right? So there's a training montage, which makes me feel like one day I could have danced with Swayze. However, we're out of time, and I have to apparently go watch Roadhouse again. So,
rest in peace, Swayze.
Right?
Yes.
So tune in next week. Well, I guess in 2 weeks, when we put another little bit of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear
It's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
Rosa, had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is a part of the ESO Network. Nick Hoffman is the host and the producer in charge of Dude Letter Podcasting. Check out his other podcasts at Mission Briefing and Doomed to Repeat, a conjunction with Alex Cummings of Tropics of Meta. This episode was edited by our editatrix, Aaron Greer, and I would like to thank the panel that was with us today. Please listen to our other podcasts, join the Facebook group, and rate and review us on iTunes. It greatly helps our cause. Thanks. Just remember.